I just went ahead and started recording, so we should be in good shape.
I think she said, that's right, okay. And it's recording to the cloud?
It is.
All right, good deal. All right, we got Charlotte. Hello, Charlotte. Christine, Vicky.
Vicky has something yummy to drink. What are you drinking, Vicky? Sorry, I caught you right in the middle of trying to actually get a sip.
No, I was on mute. Just tea.
Just tea. So have you ever had a tea called Lapsang Souchong? Or I don't know how to pronounce it.
No.
Charlotte has. It's smoked.
Oh.
So it's got this really interesting flavor. And I love anything smoked, but try it sometime if you're into tea. It's especially good loose leaf. I guess that's kind of true across the board. But
That's the signal that autumn is officially here, is when I switch from seltzer water to tea all day long.
Yes. Yes. And I've always found tea soothing in a way that coffee is not. It's got more of an ambiance for me. And when I was a senior in college, I did a study abroad in England and found out that like tea time is taken just as seriously as, you know, Americans think. And I stayed thoroughly caffeinated. Actually, Nick, how religious are you with tea time? How serious are we about tea time?
He's probably looking for the mute button.
Yeah, it's funny actually, that word in English, tea time, because some people say tea time and some dinner, but generally a tea can sometimes be a snack at 5 o'clock or something, but dinner's about 7 or 8. But this is a bit early for my tea or dinner, so it's okay.
But it was just me, and I drink a lot of tea.
I certainly have a lot of tea.
Well, we got one past the hour, so we're going to go ahead and get started. We got the recording going already. Hopefully, and I know we're going to have a few more folks joining us over the next 10 minutes. Hopefully, you guys have had a chance to go through session 2, right? I mean, where we start dumping a lot of stuff on you. I think now you're going to have much better context too. And hopefully you have some really good ideas as to what you can start offering. We haven't gone through all the flavors, but we're halfway there. And we're going to try something a little different. What I'd like to do, we're still going to use the chat area for questions. But what I'd like everyone to do, if you have a question, not just put the capital Q there, but also formulate like a 1 or 2 sentence question for us. So give us something specific that you want to drill down on. And of course, we'll still unmute you. We'll have a conversation, but I want you to think of the question ahead of time. And of course, if you got to give us a little bit of background, that's fine once we talk, but a couple of sentences with your question. So type in capital Q, let us know what you have. And we're going to go in the order in which these are submitted. The other thing I should mention, just a minor thing, I have to bolt a little bit early, about 10 minutes before the top of the hour. You're going to be in good hands with Austin. We got up to 90 minutes here. So Austin's going to take great care of you. I double booked myself, I'm embarrassed to say, back in the summer. I just put something in there and I actually committed to it and I didn't put it in the calendar. And I was just reminded about it earlier this week. So apologize for that. But at any rate, we got an open floor right now. So if anyone's got a question, again, capital Q, give us a sentence or two with your question or item you'd like to discuss. I see a few of you typing, so I know we're going to get a few here all at once.
Ed, can you play the Jeopardy music for us?
I was about to look that up. I didn't have it queued up. All right, Vicky's got the first question here. I understand the concept of selling a workshop, but I'm wondering whether you will be sharing examples of workshop presentation deck to get a sense of how you structure them. Yeah, great question. So let me bring you in, Vicky, as well. Hello, Vicky.
Hello.
Yeah, it's a great question. So Austin, thoughts?
So I have some workshops that have a preset agenda because it's a canned workshop, right? It's going to be the same every time. That's actually the minority.
Right.
Most of the workshops I do are more like extended strategy sessions. And what I do is what I would call a kickoff call before the workshop. And I think we touched on this last time a little bit, where I send over a questionnaire, and it is an onboarding questionnaire, right? I was using that incorrectly last week, right? They've said, I want to work with you. So then I send that onboarding questionnaire that gives me color and context. Then we get on the kickoff call. It's normally about an hour. And I will then say, okay, it sounds like these are the outcomes that you want, right? You're not sure what to write about. You need help coming up with your best article topics or your best LinkedIn post ideas, right? Whatever. And then we essentially hammer out the agenda for the workshop during the kickoff call. After the kickoff call, I'll review my notes. I'll put together a final agenda as bullet points. I'll send that as an email to the client and say, just want you to rubber stamp this. We both agree that if, you know, we do this workshop and we nail these outcomes, then you got what you came for. And they're like, yeah, that looks great. Or, hey, can we add this one other thing? And then that's the agenda. And then based on the agenda and the outcomes, I'll then turn to my list of content road mapping questions or brand development questions or even like project road mapping questions. And I'll then like hand select questions that tie in nicely to the outcomes, right? And so that's how I'll then structure the workshop. It's kind of custom for most clients. And then, but there's not, I will say, I don't put a whole lot of pressure on myself to improvise during the workshop. And even when we get to the day of, I'll kind of post the agenda. Here's what we're here to accomplish today, right? And then that way, if the client gets off track or even if I get off track, because surprise, you all, I do like to talk. I know that's going to be a shocker. But if either one of us gets derailed, I could say, okay, let's put that on pause for a second. Let's get back to the agenda. Let's make sure we get what we came for, right? So that's how I do it. I typically don't use a presentation deck during workshops unless there's some piece of training I need to deliver in order to then deliver the more open-ended sort of solution-focused part of the workshop. Gotcha. And if that's the case, and I need to do a little bit of instruction on brand development, here's what a brand is, here's what branding is, here's what core brand values are, fine. But every workshop is a little bit different. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. Because I can see how these would be tailored to the specific need and depending on what type of workshop it is, whether or not you would need a formal presentation deck and whether or not you're capturing feedback, you know, whether you would capture that live on screen or whatever. It does make it clear. I guess it does depend. I guess I wasn't thinking it through. It does depend on what the objective is. Mm-hmm. And in how you're going to lead said workshop, whether or not you're going to engage a lot with the client, or you're going to ask a question and let them go at it, and you're going to be capturing.
Well, keep in mind too, when I first got started with this, I was selling project road mapping and content road mapping, and that's it.
Okay.
Because I'm an anxious person and I like to do a good job. I've always been a perfectionist and a straight A student, and I don't like being put in situations where I couldn't be confident that I could deliver the outcome.
Right.
And so you can, if you're the sort of person who you really kind of need to get your sea legs with one or two of these strategy flavors first, don't worry about like delivering 9 different flavors. You can just pick the one you're most comfortable with. And if you want to use a deck, because that will help keep you on track, go for it.
Right.
But a lot of my workshops, it's just a fancy label I slap on to increase the perceived value. Really, we're doing brainstorming to help you come up with blog post ideas, or we're doing road mapping to define what the project is and come up with the first 10 to 15 steps in the project. I've answered your question. If more come up, you know, happy to address those.
I wanted to share something really quick with you guys, because I do a lot of workshops for coaching clients, and this simple little hack has been so incredible for me. And this is an example of a 90-minute workshop. I pre-plan time blocks just to help me figure out the flow and to make sure that I have budgeted time for each of the components we're going to be working on. So it's a very simple, you know, as you can see here, I created this in Microsoft Word. It's a table. And we start at 11 and we're going to end at 12:30. Each of these blocks is 10 minutes. So left to right, top to bottom, right? So this is the introduction, 10 minutes. Then we're going to get into these 5 keys we're going to discuss. So that's 10, 20, 30 minutes. Okay. Then at 11:40, we started through this guided exercise. That's 20 minutes. Then notice at noon, we get into a group discussion for 20 minutes, and then round robin and takeaways and actions. Now, does this go perfect? No. But what this enables me to do, because I get really anxious when I think about it, oh my gosh, I'm going to get in there. What if this gets out of control? This gives me a template to kind of keep the conversation on track. And it's got buffers built into it, by the way. And it's amazing how well it works. So if you're like me and you get anxious really easily walking into a situation and you got 8 people there in the room potentially or whatever, this allows me to plan ahead and to, I keep it in front of me and I make sure that we stay on track by 10-minute increments. Anyway.
That's so good, Ed. I'll point out one thing, which is some clients, if you get them talking about their business, they can talk for hours. And having some kind of posted agenda, even the time blocked grid or whatever, having something like this helps make the agenda the bad guy if you need to interrupt clients who are talking about something that's no longer even relevant to the outcomes that you're committed to delivering, right? You're working on content road mapping and they're talking about how their daughter is struggling in college. And you don't want to be rude, but you also need to be that professional who keeps them on track. So this is a really good tool. Thank you, Ed.
Yeah. Okay. Nick has a question. How to word a brief pitch for a 1.5-hour road mapping strategy service to a client? For example, review of its content, brainstorming of content ideas. I get the concept, but not sure what to promise as an outcome. What could a follow-on 3-hour call be for content strategy? All right, Nick, let's bring you in.
Yeah, that's it, Ray, because I'm already starting to think about pitching this idea to clients. And in fact, one potential client I connected with on LinkedIn, sort of PR agency specializing in tech, so my kind of subject said, can I send them some ideas? And then I sent them an idea for a half-day workshop and realized I hadn't sort of explained the outcomes of the benefits. So I said, well, scrap that. I'll send you some more ideas. But what I have in mind is a range of this, you know, this taster or starter project that, you know, 1.5 hours, maybe review where your business is, what you want to achieve. And I'd focus really on either content, coming up with ideas for blogs, reviewing the quality of the content, or media strategy, improving the media coverage. But I prefer to do the sort of the media, the content side of things.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to be glib, but with content road mapping, the outcome can be as simple as a list of ideas for topics. And I think that is a blind spot for a lot of us writers, because we can come up with topics in our sleep. Like, my guess is, it's like, you know, you could do this blindfolded, half dead, like, hey, you know, fintech, anything financial. It's like, you know, hey, could you help us come up with our, with some ideas? And you're like, people struggle with that. Mm. But to get a little bit more granular, do they have content lanes, like specific pillars that are going to kind of shore up their entire content program? Have they ever identified those? Like, what are the major categories? Is there a category they want to own? What do they want to be known for? So there could be some brainstorming around helping them come up with their content lanes or content buckets. And then within those lanes, oh, let's come up with some discrete ideas. Within those topics, right, you could help them do matchmaking between a certain topic, like, okay, you know, how is decentralized finance going to affect the insurance industry, right? And then you could say, okay, well, a listicle blog post wouldn't work very well there, but maybe some like deep analysis of three different decentralized finance startups who are playing in the insurance space, right? So, you know, there is a whole lot of detail that you can provide. In my experience, even with clients who have written a lot of content, is that they don't have an editorial calendar. The ones who do haven't really followed it. The ones who haven't really gone back to analyze how each piece has performed. They don't have a clear sense of what their best posts in terms of performance are. If they've had an outlier post that got a ton of engagement, maybe even went viral, most of the time they didn't ask why and say, how can we double down on this? Clearly this topic is resonating. Right. And so, again, not to be glib, but with content strategy, you're delivering what you have to do anyway to write for a client, but you're just formalizing it into an actionable plan. Like, there was one client, he had started several coding boot camps. He had a franchise, right? You can start like a coding foundry or a coding boot camp in your city. All I did was ask questions like, what are your favorite principles in business? What stories do you find yourself telling so often to convey a lesson that you feel like a broken record, right? And I know that in this week's lesson, I shared the link to my content road mapping questions. If you read them, you'd be like, oh, I've already got a bunch of these questions of my own. So my content road mapping engagements are typically me asking the questions, taking notes, after the fact, cleaning everything up and turning it into an actionable plan. And that's it. That's the outcome. And that's an easy way to burn through 3 hours. And the client is like, oh my goodness, that was so helpful. They could do this on their own, but most of them simply won't.
I see. So this kind of road mapping engagement could be sort of easily 3 hours. And then you could have an hour and a half kind of package before that, could you? That's slightly different or
smaller scope. It could be the exact same thing, but instead of saying, let's come up with 20 or 30 ideas, it could be, we're going to brainstorm some ideas and then we're going to pick the 10 best ones. And we're just going to double click on each of those and actually come up with like And again, they're the thought leaders. Like, they typically have domain expertise, right? So it could be like, here's the topic. Let's kick around some title ideas. What's the thesis? What's the conclusion? And so by the time they finish with you, you're going to promise them 5 to 8 ideas that are like fully fleshed out. And all they really need to do is color inside the lines at that point.
So maybe, Austin, one version could be for a client who doesn't really have their content pillars defined very well or defined at all. Like you said, content lanes or content pillars. Mm-hmm. Version A could be you mostly are working on that and then maybe some topic ideas. Version B, the longer one, could be definitely that, but a lot of content ideas and then maybe 3 or 4 that are fully fleshed out to get us started. Mm-hmm. Right. So you can, right? So you still give them the foundation, but then one has a lot more down the line.
And it won't surprise you that a content road mapping engagement sets you up to sell some sort of blogging subscription or retainer to them, because here are the ideas. And you're like, well, do you want a ghostwriter? Do you want help, you know, implementing the plan that we just created together? And so that's one of the reasons I started selling these, is I got so tired of chasing my clients and saying, please give me a topic. Please give me a topic. Like, help me help you, right? And I realized my life would get easier, and also I would get a taste, know what it was like working with this client, if I just pitched them on content road mapping first. And then sure enough, they get really excited about the ideas that we generate together. And then I'm like, well, do you have time to actually write these now? And often the answer is, well, no. I'm like, do you want help with that? Yes. Do you want me to be the one to help with that? Sure. So, but Ed, great input.
All right. Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, Nick, because I know several people are thinking the same thing. Let's see. Charlotte's got a question. And she said, this is related to the first question above. I'm curious about your process around the initial client qualification call before they agree to work with you. How long is that call? And at what point do you present the deck outlining the best way to work with the client? So let me bring you in, Charlotte.
Hey there.
Hello. So, Austin, thoughts?
So I like to be all cavalier and say these discovery calls or initial client qualification call like can be 15 or 20 minutes long. And they can, but mine are always longer, right? Because I end up like enjoying talking and getting to know people. And but they can be as short as you think you can get away with and get the information you need, right? I do have questions that I like to ask during the discovery call. And usually before, and let me pull those up, because I'm not sure these have ever come out in the actual trainings for how to sell strategy. I'll drop those into the chat here in a second so I don't get distracted. But I do go in thinking I need to answer these specific questions. Why now? Why this? Some other why questions. But then I have gotten really, really basic with what I do after the discovery call. I send an email where I say the subject line is always the same, summary plus next steps. And it's, hi, Charlotte, thank you again for taking time out of your Thursday to chat. Here's a summary of what I heard, colon, bullet point list. And then after the bullet point list, I make a call about whether or not I'm going to say, check out my deck attached. This is an offer. This is how we can work together, right? So I have a deck for my one-day brand sprint. And if I think that is the most appropriate thing to sell that client, I'll just attach that to the email. And then I'll, you know, the final call to action underneath my summary will be something like, what did I leave out from that bullet point list? Anything important? Question mark. And then if not, please check out the deck attached. This is what I think is a good next step for us for working together, right? So it's not super pitchy. It's just summery. And then the next step, which is my recommendation for how we can work together, right? But I would say I actually attach a deck less than 50% of the time. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, right there in the email, honestly, I just treat that as my proposal. And I just give them a couple of options, right? Now, if I think it's appropriate to send them a full-fledged proposal, what I will do is say, if you agree with the summary that I gave you, I'll start putting together a proposal. I'm going to send that to you. I'd like to do a follow-up call a week from now. So I'll send you that proposal in 3 days, and then we can hop on the follow-up call and discuss it then. So I don't like to send proposals and then let them just kind of stew on them. Mm-hmm. I actually like to book a follow-up call to kind of force a decision, right? You know, yeah. I don't just like to have proposals floating around up there and I'm like, well, what do you think? Right. So that's my process. You know, it's situational, whether I attach a deck right there with my price in it and here's the scope, whether I drop in a couple of options and prices right there into the email, and that's a casual or less formal proposal, or whether I say, I'm going to put together a proposal, I want to book a follow-up call. I don't have a formula. It's just a case-by-case basis. But does that give you some clarity?
That's super helpful. Yeah. And my process is now is more proposal based, which is part of my frustration that led me to take this class, because I'm investing time in the proposals, customizing ideas that they may or may not go for, that I may or may not be able to replicate for other clients. Mm-hmm. So this just makes so much more sense.
And you know, if you have the initial discovery call and you think one of your Trojan horse offers or some sort of strategy session, clarity call, road mapping, workshop, whatever, the reason those are wonderful offers is because if you think it's necessary, well, then you do have it in a deck and you don't have to put together a proposal. And it's just so much faster to move these conversations along, mm-hmm, instead of saying, let me spend hours putting together this beefy proposal for you.
Right. Makes so much sense. Do you have any pointers on the deck? On preparing the deck, is like no more than 5 slides, 10 slides. I mean, do you just have parameters you like to work within?
I like to keep them short. I like to use a lot of white space. And why don't I just show you one quickly? Is everyone cool with that? Is that okay? Okay, yeah, awesome. So let me do a screen share. Let me open this is my one day brand sprint deck. And I've sold, I don't know, 5 or 6 of these this year. So I've been pretty successful with this particular offer. I sold one earlier this week. So that's cool. And it was exactly what I described or what Charlotte brought up, where I just attached the PDF to the email. But give me one sec.
By the way, and while you're looking for that, so Alice, I got you next. Carmen and anyone else, if you got a question, capital Q, and then go ahead and give us a sentence or two with the actual question. I'm still going to unmute you so we can have a conversation, but I want to make sure that everyone formulates that question ahead of time so we can get to you as quickly as possible.
Okay, so here's the deck. So I talk a little bit about the problem. This is kind of like a value proposition light. You know, I speak directly to the audience. Picture my face. I think people like to see faces. I'm glad you're here. This is totally a throwaway slide. I get that, right? This is a little humor, and this is about brand development. So I talk about the problem a little bit more. A lot of people don't know what branding is. The idea is kind of fuzzy. And notice these are all pretty light on content, right? What is a one-day brand sprint? Like, what is it? Make sure your deck answers that question. What is it? Now, why do I offer these? This is another way of saying, you know, what is the benefit to them of a one-day brand sprint? then you can just spell it out even more quickly, right? You have my undivided attention for a day. You know, the sprint is built around your priorities, right? You're more involved in the process. How have my path clients used these? This is a little bit of social proof, but also it's meant to get their creative juices flowing. Yes, I do have a need for this, right? What does it cost? This is what I'm charging right now. One day, you know, and then I deliver the brand book after that. So I guess it's technically a little bit more than a day, but really I'm just cleaning up the content they gave me. What does the process look like? These are the steps. I'm telling you exactly what's going to happen. There need not be any uncertainty here, right? Testimonial. Hey, social proof. Testimonial. Testimonial. And if you're seeing this and for whatever reason don't have a way to get in touch with me, get in touch with me. Call to action, right? So this strategically, you all are going to be familiar with a lot of these things: process, benefits, value proposition, that sort of thing. But that's kind of it. And all told, if you take out some of the filler slides, it's really only, I mean, this is 13 total slides. So it's really short. And I'm not trying to close a sale with this as much as I'm trying to get the next conversation. Right. It has helped me close sales. People look at that. They're like, we're in. When do we get when can we get a day? And that was the client earlier this week. I'd already done a discovery call, follow up email. They look at the deck. They're like, we're in. And I'm like, cool. And then I tell them next steps. Oh, by the way, ask for people to pay for these upfront, not after the fact. We don't book a day in my calendar until they pay. I'm not going to deliver the work product and then chase you around and beg to get paid. That's not fair. I've already done my part, right? You can ask them to sign a contract. I normally don't because it's just one day. The day is the deliverable, so to speak. But hopefully that helps.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, that's great, Austin. Love that approach. Alice had a question here. She says, I'm not sure how to sell a discovery / strategy session to my target market because they usually come to me with ideas already formulated. So how do I sell an expensive session to them? So I think that's related to Nick's question. So Alice, let's bring you in. Hello.
Hello. It's sort of like a follow-up to Nick's, related to Nick's question.
Yeah.
So,
I feel like I'm almost hesitant to try to sell it.
Mm-hmm. If that's the case, it may be that these are hard to sell. This particular type of session is hard to sell to your target audience or to some clients in it. Right. It could also help you to change your positioning. If you position yourself as a content strategist, then that opens the door to conversations and opportunities that you will not have if you are just a copywriter or a content writer. And I think we may have talked about that last time. I can't remember, yeah. But it's like, just go ahead and add it to your LinkedIn title, go ahead and add it to your email signature, right? Go ahead and you're already doing the content strategy. And yeah, then, for free. You know, so just, yeah, for free. So go ahead and own that, right? But do you remember what that illustration or diagram Ed showed last time about when to bring it up? It's sometimes hard to sell content strategy after you're already just executing on their ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But when a new client comes to you, that's often the best chance you've got.
Yeah.
Or when you notice that you're kind of getting to the end of the ideas that you've already agreed upon with the client, then you could actually pitch them on doing this once a quarter as a separate engagement. So Ed, do you have that
Yeah, I was about to I was about to bring that up because you're right, that that might explain it or clarify it from a visual standpoint. Okay, so yeah, you know, I got a nagging feeling. I know something's wrong. Oh, I've identified what the challenge is that's causing that feeling. And then I've identified a way to solve it, an intervention that's, and from your standpoint, you could tell that it's effective. So it sounds like this is where you are. Well, you, it sounds like you, your clients are either here or here, right?
Yeah.
They already got the ideas. So the entry points for pitching strategy engagement, and again, we don't have to call it that, by the way, or strategy, is they haven't identified the challenge causing the feeling. They've identified it, but haven't identified an intervention. Or you can tell that the intervention they've identified is going to be ineffective. But mm-hmm. let's talk about this. Actually, I should expand this because an effective intervention doesn't mean that they've figured out exactly how they're going to execute it. Right? It's like, we got this great idea. And you're thinking, yeah, that makes sense. Actually, I agree with you. But what if they're not really sure how to bring that to life?
Mm-hmm.
That could be a strategy session or mm-hmm. a planning session, right? You can help them come up with the how.
Mm-hmm. How many of you have ever been asked to write an article that you knew going in was going to flop? Because like the topic was so hackneyed. It's like, this has already been done so many times before. You don't have fresh research. You don't have anything else to add here. And you're sitting there thinking, I could come up with 12 ideas better than this in 3 minutes. So
that would be an effective intervention. I would call that an ineffective. Right.
Yes. And
but what, like, if,
well, I was going to say, like, sometimes you're even working with a marketing director who's really good on like the numbers side or the management side, but they're less creative. And so they know that content can do some good work for them, some heavy lifting for them. So I could say that that sometimes, like, their idea is good. We need to ramp up blogging. You're like, yes, that can be an effective intervention. But then they hand you the list of topics and you're like, this is garbage. I am sick to my stomach. If you really want me to write this stuff, I guess I will, because I may as well be the one to take your money, but I don't think this is going to be effective for you. So it's that kind of hybrid of, like, I love what you said, Ed, about expanding this, but you were going to say something.
Yeah. And like, so playing with what you've got there, they came to you, we got this great idea for an article series. It's a three-part series. And you're thinking, okay, they've identified an effective intervention. I can see that they thought about it. But you know what they haven't identified? Those content pillars. So this is kind of like jumping ahead. We could do this, but where does this fit in your content marketing strategy? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, we could do it, but have you thought about the timing, the impact? Have you thought about repurposing? You got 10 years worth of evergreen content you're sitting on that mm-hmm. you could easily repurpose into all kinds of other formats. You know, you don't have to constantly create new stuff. It sounds like you're going against, you know, yourself and your business, but you're not. You're helping the client. So there are moments, many moments, when the client, on the surface, it sounds like they got an effective intervention. But like Austin said, yeah, maybe, but they're giving you like this little piece of it when you mm-hmm. know there's much more to this that they haven't really thought about. Now, it doesn't mean you should, don't tell them you're wrong. Just this gives you an opportunity to open up a discussion about it.
I like what you said about they may have the ideas, but they may not know how it fits into their content pillars.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
And I think, again, there's a paradigm shift in this, right? I was just sort of the order follower writer for years. And part of it was I didn't necessarily have the confidence to push back and say, I don't think that's a very good idea. But you get some experience under your belt and you have the sixth sense for knowing this is a dirty diaper of an idea. It's gonna flop. Like, we need to throw it out immediately.
That's where I'm at now, Austin.
And so, you know, you watch them, they're all over the place. You're like, how are you going to build a reputation for these one or two or three content lanes if your writing's all over the place? You're not even writing about the problems you want to get paid to solve. So when you feel that like check in your spirit, that's weird language, I guess, but I'll use it. When your gut is like, this is not going to work, I think get on a call with them and just say, what do you think about going a little bit deeper and seeing if we can't find some better ideas? And they may react poorly to that and you pull back and you're like, well, I can't go there with this client. But I do think based on Ed's diagram here, there are some really good entry points. It's just learning how to see those opportunities when they come up, right? And trust your own expertise, Alice. I would say that too. It took me a while to get there and be like, this is not a good idea. I think I can do better and I can't remain silent anymore. I'm going to say something. Hope it goes well.
And Ed, I really liked your diagram of earlier about how to you were talking about with a group, but it would work pretty much the same with a single client on a 90-minute strategy call, I would think.
Absolutely, because let me tell you, what's in my head typically about how this is going to go is usually way off from reality. So, and I'm so visual, until I map it out like that, I won't realize, well, wait a minute, 90 minutes are actually going to fly by. Mm-hmm. Now I realize they're going to fly by. So I'm going to have to make some decisions here. You know,
I need something visual also.
Yeah. And you can even put, you know, each of those blocks, you can even put in the top left corner, the actual time, you know, 11:10, 11:20. I have to do that too, because I forget where I am once I'm in the middle of it. But yeah, so glad to hear that was helpful.
Thank you. It is.
Good stuff. Yeah. All right. So Carmen had a question. I think we clarified a bit on onboarding questions. She said, which questions are they? I thought there were 10 questions. Sorry, I can't find the Google Doc. So Carmen, I just want to make sure that I saw Austin sent you a link here in the chat.
I see that. I guess I was just making sure that I had understood, because I looked at all the questions. That there was the consulting questions. So I guess I wanted to know, which questions do you send when you send the invoice?
It depends on the list
of questions was.
Yeah. Great question. So I put in for project road mapping, this is my onboarding questionnaire for a project road mapping session where I'm just trying to help them define the project, right? And I, once they agree to project road mapping, I send the invoice. You know, this is the very next thing that I send. It doesn't matter if you send it before the invoice, right before or right after. It doesn't really matter. But
right.
So it's onboarding. It's onboarding, not intake or qualifying.
Right.
Correct. Yeah. Right.
So that's what you said, the project road mapping, this link right here, the project road mapping questions. That's those are the onboard, the questions that you send ahead of time that the client fills out and sends back to you before the session.
That's right. Okay. That's right. And then sometimes you may realize, oh, I need to ask some follow-up questions during that road mapping session to pull out even more material, get more clarity so that we can define what the project is. And that's when I reach to this toolkit of, I call them open-ended consulting questions. And if you click through, you'll see what I mean by open-ended. They're not okay, like...
Okay, so I read those. So those are the ones that you actually talk with the client after you send the other questions. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
So okay. That's right. So when you're actually doing the project road mapping, and you're thinking, okay, so they definitely want to ramp up content marketing, but I need to understand, okay, well, what does a like a home run look like for you here? Like, what's the ideal outcome here for you? You know, there, you all are already good at asking questions. You may not even need this toolkit the way I do. I've just found that sometimes it really helps me between the onboarding and any kind of kickoff call and the session itself. If I need to have some sort of agenda, I'll go ahead and assign certain questions to agenda items so that I'm over-prepared. Half the time, I may not even need to look at the agenda by the time I get to the session, because I'm like, oh, they know they want to kickstart the blog again. They need help coming up with a content roadmap or whatever. And I'm going to come in over-prepared, but they're going to be thrilled if I send them away with 10 to 15 topics. So that's easy. That's an easy home run to hit. So all of these links to all these questions are in that training that you all that dropped on Monday. Mm-hmm. So it's all there. And the links even show up, they even correspond to the particular flavor of strategy. So last thing I'll say, I know I've been long-winded about this. Last thing I'll say is sometimes the questions change based on the nature of the project and the flavor of the strategy and the outcome you're trying to deliver. But you're smart people. You get that. You can use my questions or you can come up with ones that you think are better. And even if your clients are in a specific niche or industry or market, your questions are going to be a little bit different too. Does that help, Carmen?
Yeah, that does.
Cool.
All right. So again, guys, if you have a question or want to get feedback on something or want to brainstorm something with Austin, just put in queue, type in a question, a sentence or two, and then we'll bring you in. I think we have an open floor right now. Let me just double check. I think we've gone through everybody who had previously posted something. Yeah. All right. So we're clear right now. So don't be shy. And we're officially on round two. So if you had another question from before, I like to always keep it to one question so we could get to everybody. We're officially on round two. I'm going to also, by the way, I'm going to try to sneak out in about 4 or 5 minutes, Austin, and hopefully I'm going to do it quietly. Hopefully it will all go smoothly with the recording.
It's quiet quitting. He's quiet quitting this call.
I know. I hate that.
It's fine. We're all good. I'm just going to start. The questions are going to become mandatory. I'm just going to make awkward eye contact.
I'm scared what's going to happen.
Questions.
I'm scared about what's going to happen when I leave. It's going to be like a big party or, are you going to bring the hammer down?
Things got crazy after Ed left. But yeah, keep them coming.
I was going to give you one example of something I came up with a coaching client of mine this week around what Alice was talking about. So I'm not going to give too many details, but she's got a new prospect and they're already sold in content marketing and they already put content out there. But the founder is a doctor and it's got a great story apparently, and she wants to present herself as a thought leader. From what we could tell, the problem is not ideas. The problem is there's no structure or logic to the ideas. They're kind of like whatever comes to mind, she's putting it out there. And they have this great company story. And I told my client, I said, listen, you got a great opportunity to sell a content road mapping engagement here, a content strategy to help them identify those lanes and those pillars and align that with their company story, align that with events they're going to be coming up. You know, just make sure that the whole thing makes sense. To you, that's normal. You know, that probably is no big deal. But to them, they got so many other things going on and then content on top of that, that they're just whatever, you know, whatever idea she wakes up with one morning, she's putting together. And, you know, you could really add tremendous value by giving this whole thing structure. And make sure that it's well aligned with what they're trying to accomplish. Just tremendous value in that. So she was really excited. She's going to pitch it tomorrow. And I think it's going to go really, really well. But that's just another example of someone who on the surface looked like they got their act together and they think they know what they want. But upon further investigation, they didn't have it all figured out. Charles's question here, you mentioned three kinds of proof in the video and cited testimonials and proof of path. What is the third kind? Is it proof of outcome? Can you talk more about ways to get this if you haven't offered strategy before?
So there's a Juicy Offers worksheet and all three types of proof. There's examples of all three at the end. I'll just go ahead and drop this into the chat, though. It's proof of path, proof of capability, and proof of outcome. And I'll just read you quickly some examples, right? Now, keep in mind, you don't have to use all of these. You don't even have to use a fraction. I just think when you have an offer that you want to put out there, it makes sense to kind of layer in proof like a, I always say like a parfait, you know, layers of proof are a good thing. And as I really drilled down into this idea of offers, I realized, oh, there are different kinds, right? Now, the one that we reach for most readily is testimonials, or we might reach for on a website, it's called a brag bar, but that logo wall, like here are the clients I've worked with. There's credibility that comes with who else you've worked with, but, one of the ones that's sort of really helpful and also easier to locate if you haven't sold strategy before, right, is proof of the path. Like if you're selling content marketing to SaaS companies and you can find the founder of a software as a service company who talked in some interview about how crucial content marketing was for her company. She is validating the path. She's like, we can't imagine achieving the growth we've achieved without having great content. You don't have to be the one who wrote the content to be able to grab that quote, especially if she's like a name brand CEO, like, you know, like if you were doing an apparel company and you got Sarah Blakely of Spanx to, is it Spanx? I think it's called Spanx. I think she's wonderful, super smart, tenacious. And if I wanted to say, hey, I have a women's apparel company and I was able to include a quote from Sarah Blakely, that she's going to make the point better than I can because she has the authority. Right? So that's what I mean by proof of path. What research or statistics validate the point that you're trying to make? What quotes from thought leaders or recognized experts can you include? You can even include before and after case studies for content marketing, and you weren't even the provider. All you're doing is saying people who walk this path, this is the kind of results that people on this path get. Right? So counterexamples of people who failed to take action, that's another big one, right? But anyway, you all go into that Juicy Offers worksheet, scroll down to the end, and just read through the list. It's okay if you don't have some of these. I don't have most of them, right? Memberships and professional associations is under proof of capability. Maybe it's like a Yogi Berra. He said, I wouldn't want to be a part of any club that would have me as a member, right? I'm kind of that way, right? But maybe some of you all have, you know, your Google AdWords certified or whatever, right? Go find the ones that you do have and just sprinkle those, layer those into your offers and offer what proof you can. And also you can leave it out. Like I sent a deck to a potential client. I have never done this type of work. Well, that's not true. I've done this type of work. It's operations consulting for a digital agency. I've worked with tons of agencies. I've advised them on their operations, but I've never been brought in as like a heavy hitter consultant to basically do the deep diagnostic work, say, here's what's wrong, and then propose fixes. Never done that. I think it would be cool to do that. I'm willing to try and fail at it. But I put together a deck and I was able to offer no proof, really. And I sent the deck anyway. Mm-hmm. So I outlined that juicy offers process. It's an ideal. Do the best you can with it. But if there are parts that are like, you're just like, I don't have it, that's okay. We all have to start somewhere. So Charlotte, is that enough to go on for now?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, you definitely covered this well in the course. And you, I think, added more flavor here. So that's great. Thanks.
Flavor.
I'm going to have a parfait.
it does kind of make you hungry. You're like, how long has it been since I've had a parfait, right? Okay. And obviously, if you all have any questions about like the supporting materials, please bring those to these future group sessions, right? If anything needs clarification. Pricing. This is from Nick. For the first few strategy offers you do, is it worth giving a client a slight discount in return for a testimonial if it hopefully goes well? Absolutely, Nick. I really get annoyed with freelance coaches, thought leaders who they're like, no, you like never compromise on price. I'm like, you did. Like, don't be disingenuous. Like, we all have to compromise all the time, right? Pick a price you're comfortable with. And no, that's not the ceiling. But I normally just say, what amount of money would I feel great about making for this amount of work? Regardless of what anyone else might charge, that's like 10 times as much, right? Even that creative operations consulting offer that I put together, there's a guy named David C. Baker I really admire. He charges $18,000 a day. Y'all, Austin Church ain't charging $18,000 a day. I'm gonna tell you that right now. Like, I found someone on the lower end and I'm like, yeah, it's probably me. And maybe it's lack of confidence, but start with where you're comfortable, Nick. Get that testimonial. Don't be afraid to over-deliver. If your one like strategy session needs to leak over into a second to do some cleanup work, if that's what's required to get the testimonial and get a happy client, fine. We're all learning and getting smarter and better with every single thing that we sell. And so the very first project road mapping session I sold for $500, and the client did not blink. He said yes immediately. And I was like, I'm gonna go for $625 next time. And I did. And I got a yes then too. So I would say, you know, start with it's fine to start with a price you think will get you a yes. And then just keep on like pushing it by like 10% each time until you start to get some no's. And then if you get a no the first time, you can always lower the price and shrink the scope accordingly, right? And then here's the other thing. If there's someone who you want to do this with for free in exchange, like a friend or someone you have a lot of trust with, do it for free to get a testimonial. That's fine. You all could do them with each other to get testimonials. That's fine. The testimonial is valid whether or not money changed hands. So don't be afraid to cheat. Ethical cheating. Highly ethical cheating, right? Okay. Christine. I'm just going to read these out loud, sorry, so I can process. I have a retainer client now for monthly content. We have never done any kind of formal strategy. He just trusts me to write the topics as I have deep knowledge in his industry, which is automotive. To get my first proof, would it be worthwhile to offer a strategy session at a reduced cost to get his testimonial? Yes, Christine. Love this idea. I think, did Christine leave? She may have had to go. Christine, if you're still among us, I can't see you, but anyway, I know it's a little out of order to do it with an existing client, but I want to know how to approach it with him. She logged off. Thank you, Vicky. I can find a way to email her later, but I actually think testing out an offer, a new offer with a client you already have a lot of trust with, is a great way to build confidence with this. It's a new thing, right? Like my knees were kind of shaking when I sent off that deck. I'm like, I can't prove that I can deliver with this creative operations consulting thing. I think I can, but I don't have a lot of proof. So it helps that my friend is the one who's trying to get me in at his agency, right? So it's okay to look for a softer landing if you can find one. I like to be pragmatic that way because I actually, I don't like to fail. So like, look for all those different ways to set yourself up for success as you're gaining confidence in this, right? And again, I'll say this over and over again, you all are already doing this type of work. You're already doing it. And it's just a matter of charging for it as a separate standalone offer. Okay, I think that gets us to the end. Hopefully we can like pass that through to Christine through osmosis. Anything else? Charlotte, go for it.
I was just gonna say, I'm, you know, working diligently on my three offers, the Trojan horse, the meat and potatoes, and the subscription. And if anyone else is kind of in that space and looking for feedback this week, I would be happy to exchange, you know, what we're working on and, you know, give you some feedback. I guess I can put my email in the chat, but I'm all for peer-to-peer consultation. And I love that idea, Austin, of maybe us giving each other content road mapping support in exchange for a testimonial. That's very cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, some of you may already be doing some of your own content marketing. I do on LinkedIn. And so like if you are blogging, you are on Twitter, you are on LinkedIn, wherever, do content road mapping with each other. It's often helpful to have someone as a thought partner who also can do the scribing for you to take notes. That's what's so crazy about this content road mapping thing is I'm not oversimplifying it. I ask questions and then I write down what they tell me. And then later on, I give their ideas back to them and they say, that was so valuable. Thank you. And I'm like, you could do this with the voice memo app on your phone. All right, what's the next question, right? What frustrates you about your industry? Okay, go, right? What frustrates clients about your industry? All right, you know, we could do that for ourselves. What do people dislike about freelance writers? We could all come up with an answer, right? And then write a LinkedIn post about it. So could we perhaps get a contact list of participants so we could exchange information ideas? Yes, I don't see a problem with that. I'll reach out to Ed and Crystal. I don't think I actually have all of your email addresses yet, but I think that's a good idea to make happen. And get some testimonials. I have, go for it, please.
Oh, hi, sorry. Yeah, I just want to say I am more than happy to listen to other people's offers at this early stage, but I really have the sense because my industry is just a little specific in the way it works. So I think I'm making progress, but I think it's going to take me some time to sort. I'm going to have to like sort of leverage the basic concepts that you're talking about because obviously they apply to what I'm doing, but they're going to look a little different. I'm going to have to make them look a little different using your concepts. So I think it's going to take me longer than the rest of the group to get to something that I'm like, okay, this is what I know I can sell versus this is what I hope I can sell. But I'm happy to participate and give people feedback. So I just wanted to say that.
That's a good
point. I'm going to be lagging. Pardon?
That's a good point. It's a good point, Vicky. I mean, depending on the industry you're in, it can be a little bit harder to think, well, how would I sell strategy into this? Like Ed and I have done this program once before, And there was a writer who is very accustomed to working with large corporations with entire marketing departments.
Yeah, that's where I'm coming from. Yeah.
and content programs, not just like content strategy, but entire programs. And you're thinking about omni-channel, like they're everywhere, right? And they're like, okay, you're just sort of like a cog in the machine, right? And and sometimes you'd need to go a little bit down market, right? Because if you're looking at small or medium-sized businesses, they're just not as mature with their content.
Right.
Often, but honestly, there are some startups like content is everything to them and they're very, very mature with it. And they just, you know, so it just kind of depends. But I really appreciate you all wanting to help each other. And, you know, obviously, I think the sooner you come up with an offer and put it out into the world, the sooner you get meaningful feedback, the sooner you iterate. Like my offers now are not the original ones I had. So even though it makes me feel a little bit like exposed or nervous to put out a new offer around creative operations consulting, whether I get a yes or a no, I'm going to get some kind of meaningful intel back. So sooner you get your offer out, the sooner you can improve it, right? Okay. Other questions? Or I could sing a song. Not going to do it. Just kidding. Sing, Deb. I once won a karaoke contest.
You know...
Singing. Yeah, go for it, Vicky.
It just occurred to me, didn't somebody last week say that they live in Florida? And if they do, are they okay?
Alice does, upper left-hand corner for me. Like,
okay. Pardon?
She said it was fine. They got a little bad weather, but everything was fine where she lives. Have any of you already sold a strategy engagement?
I did in the past. You know, I realized last week I have done it probably like 5 times over the last 3 years. I just haven't made it an ongoing, it's been very situational.
And so because it was situational, you didn't think to add it to like your main menu of offerings?
Just seem more driven by the client and their willingness to, you know, certain clients have just been more willing to be exploratory. Like they were these are marketing people who knew that they needed a thought partner essentially. So this was like someone who was like very mature as a client and self-aware on a level that most people aren't. Or I also worked with lawyers who are used to charging by the hour. And I think at some point I realized, okay, they want me to figure out what I would do for them. It's going to take me a certain amount of time. They're lawyers. They'll understand if I want to charge them. And indeed that was true. But, you know, at some point you've just got to put it out there and say, this is how I work.
Mm-hmm. Who is willing to admit to being nervous about this? Are you nervous? Or does this just feel good?
I'm not nervous.
I'm actually pretty stoked about it because it gives me a framework to work, to do things with my clients that I had wanted to do anyway. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah,
No, I'm working with relatively inexperienced business owners of health and wellness businesses locally who don't know anything about marketing. That's the client I'm working with right now. And I'm actually producing all of their content, pulling it from their Instagram and their Facebook. And it's going really well. And I'm going to set up their whole email marketing program and their website copy and content. And so if I had this before, it would have been a little bit easier, but I pretty much did a lot of it with them before we started. And so this is really, I'm really stoked about this. Actually, mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a lot easier for me to do, to help these people that I've gotten in contact with. Because like I said, they're relatively inexperienced and they don't know what to do for their marketing. And that's where my expertise is direct response marketing strategy.
You bring up this really good point, right? That before I was doing project road mapping and content road mapping, I was actually doing it the hard way. And now it's strange that like I do a lot of brand messaging workshops, brand sprints. You all have already seen some of that in the two trainings. You would not believe how much easier it is to write web content when I've already done brand development and I've already done core brand messaging. And all I have to do is kind of deploy that to specific web pages. Like, oh, they already know what their brand position is. We've already identified their key differentiators. I've already created some solution-focused statements based on individual differentiators. We've already gone really deep with their target audience. And now they need web content. And it's like, well, it's already like 60% written. I still charge the same, but I just come into the project already having, and if I did that work, then like I've already got a sense of the brand voice and personality and tone. So another way to approach selling these front end sessions, foot in the door, right, Trojan horse, is what could I sell that would actually make it a whole lot easier for me to do the next job? And that's one reason content road mapping made so much sense for me. I was doing a lot of ghostwriting and I'm like, well, shoot, if I had my two topics at the beginning of every month, my life would get a lot easier, right?
Now we're just talking about the hurricane.
It's worth talking about.
Well, Alice came back, so we wanted to...
Actually, Austin,
Alice disappeared. Yeah. But yeah, Nick, Austin, go for it.
I just wanted to say something quick. My internet's going in and out, so I don't know if I have to turn my video off. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. This was a great session. But I'm going to do something a little different with this because I've already done like a course, a group coaching and all of that. I'm going to pick some of that stuff apart and do strategy sessions using some of the stuff that I've already done. But it would be a good way to introduce somebody to what I'm doing. So mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
So you would use a strategy session that would be partly educational and that would help you sort of, say a little bit more.
Well, okay. For instance, I did a challenge to a group coaching to a done for you. So let's say I would take either one of those. I have three phases: design your vision, create an experience, expand your reach. So I could maybe take part of the design your vision and come up with a strategy session or a bootstrap session on just some facets in that part of the program. So that if you like that, then if they wanted to do more with me, I could take them deeper into do a deeper dive into the rest of it, or just jump into any part that they're missing. Maybe it's expand your reach, which includes repurposing.
Yes, I love it. You carve off a sliver of a bigger offering, offer that almost as like an introductory or 101 course.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then if they like it, you're like, well, yeah, then you can sort of ante up for the full thing. See ya, Carmen. Thank you. I don't know why I raised the volume of my voice as though that was going to help. But I think that's a really good idea, Deb. And obviously you've already got the training. So it's a pretty quick process of deciding what and all that you want to offer in an abbreviated session. So that sounds like a good plan. Keep us posted.
I will. Like I haven't gone through all of your training, obviously, and I'm still in the middle of session two, but I think this is what would fit into it. I think this is how it would work. I mean, you seem to understand what I'm talking about.
it makes sense to me because of the value ladder, right? It's strategically sound to sell a smaller engagement that makes it easier for you to later sell a bigger engagement that's a continuation of the same thing. So that's good.
Okay. Thank you.
Of course. Nick, I think you had a question.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, this kind of discussion, because I think particularly when we talk about the, there's two main challenges. So clarifying what you can offer as a kind of strategy, and then who to sell it to. Because I think I specialize in tech, and a lot of my customers are either very big tech companies, global management consultancies, who generally they sort of appreciate good writing, they want it more journalistic. But I think it's going to be harder to sell the kind of content road mapping workshops to those companies, because they might even see it as an insult. They might think, what, you're going to teach me about content 101? But I think maybe the sort of the startups or some of the fintechs, or maybe the sort of PR agencies might be more receptive to it. Because up until now, I was thinking, right, I work with a lot of PR agencies, and they contract out, often kind of secretly write and work to me. But I think they might be more receptive to it. And I've been trying to sort of almost bypass them, because they take their fee from the client, and then they've got some left over to pay me, and I can make more money by working directly with a client. But maybe I just have to be a bit more flexible about who the real market is for this strategy, because there's definitely, I know I can do it, but it's just finding, with some hard work, it's finding the right customer.
And so I think you're onto something, and it's kind of what, you know, Vicky brought it up earlier, like if you're going to find it harder to sell into like these bigger clients, then you go downstream, like which companies are in the same market, same industry, but in terms of life cycle, are just several stages behind. One other idea, Nick, with some larger companies, you know that they're interested in content. Another way to approach this is actually doing some sort of content road mapping for like a long form narrative case study or a white paper. And if you all haven't already, check out Case Study Buddy. A guy named Joel Kletke started it. He's really smart. I think their case studies start at $4,000 for a single asset. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's right. And then their packages of assets, meaning it wouldn't just be like a long form case study sort of designed out into a pretty PDF, but it might be long form, short form sales deck. So that'll just give you an idea of like what you can charge. But Ed even has a whole separate program that he did with another one of his partners, similar to me, all about writing white papers. Mm-hmm. And part of that, the strategy for selling them is that you do a smaller, separate standalone engagement. I want to say, don't quote me on this, but it's like $1,500 to help somebody put together a white paper plan. Like, what is the white paper going to be about? What sort of research do we need to pull together? What is the thesis? What are the main supporting points? What is the outline or table of contents? Maybe we even write the conclusion, you know, like help again. Similar to content road mapping, where you're maybe with a few key ideas, you're giving them sort of color inside the lines. But there are other pieces or forms of very valuable long form content that actually require a significant amount of preparation to do well.
Yeah, that's a really good idea, because I'm always amazed when I work with really big multi-billion dollar companies how bad some of the white papers are, and how much money they waste, and how many of these white papers get shelved. And to them, like, you know, might be a lot of money for me, but to the company, it's nothing, it's peanuts.
If you price it, that can even be their discretionary marketing budget. They don't even have to, like, they can put it on a credit card without thinking, and they don't even have to go through the purchasing department or that, what is the other? I love the big corporate words for, it's not acquisitions, but anyway, they don't even have to jump through hoops. They can be like, yes, we want this marketing asset. And you're like, we'll tell you what, let's outline it together. I'll send you a, you know, color inside the lines plan for your white paper or for your case study or whatever. And then obviously, if you want to pay me to actually ghostwrite it for you, we can discuss that afterwards, right? But I've recently, within the past 3 months, I've sold 3 case studies for $3,000 each. So I think people are realizing that, especially if it's narrative and you actually want people to read it, you need someone who knows how to tell a story, right? There's a huge market for that, which Study Buddy proves definitively. But Nick,
with case studies, I've realized that sometimes I charge, you know, maybe $1,000, maybe a bit more for case studies. But in some ways, they're the real sales magnet. They're one of the most useful marketing materials for companies. But just because 100%. They're generally shorter, at 800 words, people think, oh, well, I can't charge as much as white paper.
That's right. And I'm like, it's a long form narrative driven case study, 1,000 to 1,500 words. I think I charged $2,975. So it was just below 3,000, right? And I do one-on-one interviews with the customer or client being featured in the case study, right? And I know that this is a little bit different than strategy, so we're off topic right now, but a lot of it comes back to strategy as a way to get more leverage in your writing business, better results with less effort. If you sell a content road mapping session for a white paper, it could also be a strategy breakdown. That's another sales or marketing asset that companies need. Like, can we take a case study and actually ask ourselves, what did we actually do with that client? People need good writers to create this stuff, right? So maybe there's room for some of you with all of that. And then the last one that I have started doing more of is, I'll call it a start here page on a website. It's long form. And I don't know, have you all ever checked out Andy Raskin or this narrative positioning framework that he has helped to popularize? I can show you, I'll drop this in. The greatest sales deck I've. So this was the first article that I read where I even became familiar with the idea, right? But the idea is that you use a story to sell the problem. And typically you tell a story in such a way that, hey, there's this cultural shift going on right now. Because of this cultural shift, there'll be some winners and losers. And if you want to be one of the winners, here's what you've got to do. And oh, by the way, if you're going to do that anyway, we can help you do it faster, better, easier, whatever, right? So you sell the problem in story form, which automatically sells the solution too. So this is, anytime you're selling long form content, you can sell a strategy session on the front end, which is essentially a planning session for this longer form content. Could be a white paper, could be case study, could be what is essentially a sales page. That's all a start here page is. It's a sales page, but I use this narrative positioning framework. So hopefully that helps, gets creative juices flowing. And remember, doesn't have to be called strategy. It could be called planning, brainstorming, really whatever. Okay.
Nick, I just wanted to add that I work with tech companies as well. And I've had I did a brainstorming session with a smaller tech company that they really needed help with. I worked like five or so of their VPs to come up with like thought leader topics. So you might want to look at the smaller companies. The bigger companies, I think the white paper white paper planning would be a great idea for the bigger companies. So you might want to consider both of those.
And Deb, you brought up something else. I have several coaching clients who do thought leadership coaching. So if you have VPs at some of these companies, some of them are actually interested in building a personal brand. And even some executives at larger companies who to some degree still need to be a rainmaker and help create opportunities for the company, they're not necessarily sure what they should write about on LinkedIn, right? Oh, I have this big HR company. I guess I need to be writing about HR, but what should I be writing about? So, you know, yes, we're accustomed to working with like marketing directors at companies, but working one-on-one around thought leadership with founders, with VPs, with executives, I've done a fair amount of that too. Certainly my clients have, and there's a huge need for road mapping there. Just because someone has a lot of business experience or leadership experience doesn't mean they know what to write about.
Oh, and one more, and Nick, I don't know if it's the same for you, but I have a similar strategy. I'm used to working with larger clients, primarily through agencies, but my plan is to sort of shift over to direct my services towards smaller biotech companies who can't afford to hire their agencies yet. But what I found very useful is my exposure working with these larger companies, you're exposed to a lot of strategic. They're nothing more, but they're these strategic offerings that you can tailor and sort of like scale down and convert to sell to the smaller company as a means of like, okay, before you grow huge, you need to be prepared because you already know what they're going to be doing later down the line. Like, I don't know if that's unique to my industry or not, but it seems like, you know, you can always take something that big companies are doing and sort of not miniaturize it, but you know, I think you understand what I'm saying. Like make it, you know, like
it's so good.
That's my idea anyway. I'll tell you if it works in about 6 months.
Well, a lot of the things that I have sold to my clients who are typically digital agencies, like I work with the founders of digital agencies. I work with consultants. Like I said, I work with people who want to be thought leaders at some of these middle market companies, right? Anyway, I have friends who are consultants and they did like these huge management consulting engagements for like management consulting firms you've heard of. And then they're telling me about their projects. And I'm like, oh, I could do like a micro-sized version of that with the local startup founder. So I think that's genius, Vicky. It's like, if you've seen something that was effective for one of your clients, steal it, make it your own, and turn around and sell it to another client.
That's it's all the same concept, right? Mm-hmm. It's the concept. The strategic concept is the same. You're talking about pillars, but like to me, messaging pillars mean something different, but it's all the same concept. You know what I mean? And you're just going to like.
So one of my friends, his name's Paul Millard. He worked for McKinsey. Huge consulting firm, right? And he was like just telling me offhandedly one day, like, oh, yeah, like when we were working with a new client, the first thing we always have to do is formulate a problem statement. Like, what are we even solving for here, people? Right? And I was like, I've never heard that phrase. Problem statement. And how many times have I sent over a proposal to a client and they're like, well, this is kind of what we need. And then I have that, oh crap moment where I'm like, I needed to ask more questions because the proposal itself was fine, but the problem statement was over here.
Right.
So when I started sending those summaries, bullet points over email, it's really just a problem statement. I need them to say, this is exactly the problem we're trying to solve for. Otherwise, it's way too premature to talk about scope and price, right? And guess what is great for even coming up with a problem statement? Project road mapping, right? And you wanna look schmancy in a project road mapping session, be like, all right, let's formulate our problem statement. And they're like, ooh, you know, Vicky is legit. She just threw out problem statement, right? So anyway, yeah, like be Picasso or Van Gogh or whoever talked about how great artists steal. Steal ethically. Ethically.
We're not stealing anything.
Yeah, that's, you're just...
Nobody owns concepts.
It's just like poaching peasants from a wealthy landowner in rural England. Nick knows. Yeah. He's poached peasants.
Well, people, my argument is people who can't afford McKinsey or FCB communications agency, they deserve to have good marketing.
They still need the rigor. They need
it. Just because they can't afford to pay for it.
Yeah.
These places don't own that.
Well, here's the thing too. You put your own spin on it. So if you're teaching something like that, you put your own spin on it, you rename things, you come up with something a little different. So you're not specifically copying.
It's ownable and it's your IP at that point. But we are at 2:30. I want to respect your time. Thank you for the great dialogue, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. It's been great, Austin. Thanks.
Thank you.